We began the Mishnah last time on Daf Chof Aleph Omed Aleph. Let's learn the Mishnah again, and then we're going to begin the Gemara. Lo yar belo noshim elo shmoina osra, shmoina asora. A king cannot marry too many wives, only 18, but no more. Everybody else in Klal Yisrael can marry as many as he likes, but a king can only marry 18. And we'll soon see, Mr. Hashem, where exactly is that learned from? Rabbi Yehuda Aimer Mar Behulai. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees and says, actually, he can marry as many wives as he like, but there is one condition. Ubilvad, Shelo Yiu Mesirois Es Liboy, as long as they do not turn his heart away. So we must remind ourselves of the Pasuk. The Pasuk says that a king should not marry too many wives, lest they turn away his heart. So it would seem to be, and this is going to be the discussion of the Gemara in a moment, that the Torah is, as it were, uncharacteristically, the Torah is actually giving us a reason behind the Avera. When the Torah says, don't eat Chazir, the Torah doesn't give any explanation. Just don't eat Chazir, period. Over here, the Torah is saying he should not marry too many wives, lest they turn away his heart. So Rabbi Yehuda therefore says, well, if that's the reason, one and one is two. If they do not turn away his heart, then presumably this issue does not apply. And under those circumstances, he can marry as many wives as he wants. Rabbi Shimon Omer the other way around. Rabbi Shimon Omer afilo achas umesira es liboy harizeh lo yiso eno. Rabbi Shimon disagrees and says the number is not important. Even if you marry one wife who's going to turn his heart away, that's also asa. Im kein lomo nema lo yarbe loy, quote unquote. So if that's the case, if the number's not critical, why indeed did the Torah say don't marry too many? Lo yarbe loy noshim. The answer is dafilu ka Avigail. Even Avigail, who was a great tzaddikus. So therefore there was no chashash that she would turn his heart away. But nonetheless, if you're going to marry too many wives, even if they are great tzaddikim and sidkonios, like Avigail, that would still be us. So now, let's, before we see the Gemara, just press pause for a moment. According to Rabbi Yehuda, a king essentially may marry as many wives as he likes. As many as he likes. Why? Because once the Torah stipulates that the reason behind this Avera is lest they turn away his heart, says Rabbi Yehuda, I follow that reasoning. And therefore, in the event that we can be assured that they will not turn away his heart, he can actually marry as many wives as he likes. Reb Shimon clearly disagrees. Reb Shimon did not say that he can marry as many as he likes. To the contrary, he was more machmi. He said that even if he marries one wife, but if she turns away his heart, that would be awesome. But he did not allow the king to marry 100 wives based on the rationale that we're talking about women who will not turn his heart away. To the contrary, he said, even if he marries Noshim like Avigail, who are a great, great tzaddikim, and there is zero chashash that they will turn away his heart, still you cannot marry them. So in the final analysis, what does it sound like? It sounds like, and this is going to be the discussion in the Gemara, do we or don't we follow the reasoning behind the Avera? Now, in ordinary cases, it could be that maybe it's not so relevant because we don't necessarily know the reason. The Gemara will discuss this. But over here, the Torah has clearly spelled out l'chayra what the reason is. Do not marry too many wives because they will turn your heart away. So Rabbi Yehuda is being doiresh tam adekra, which means he's following the reasoning in the pasuk. And if the Torah says the problem is turning away the heart, then presumably if they're not going to turn away his heart, then it's okay, he can marry 1,000 wives. And yet Rabbi Shimon disagrees. Rabbi Shimon says even if you marry wives like Avigail, they will definitely not turn away his heart. It's still also. So Rabbi Shimon seems not to be following the reasoning behind the pasuk. if the Torah says don't marry too many wives, and we'll see in a moment we know that refers to 18, then there is no exception to that whatsoever. So it seems to be a machloikus between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Do we or don't we follow the reasoning behind the Aveira? According to Rabbi Yehuda, we do. According to Rabbi Shimon, we do not. And therefore, 18 is the maximum in all cases, no exceptions whatsoever. So with that introduction, have a look now in the Gemara, because the Gemara is very bothered by this. Says the Gemara, Lameimra, is this to tell us? De Rabbi Yehuda, Dorish, Tama, the crop. Rabbi Yehuda clearly seems to be darshaning the reasoning behind the pasuk. He is extrapolating a halacha based on the reasoning behind the Aveira. The reasoning behind the Aveira is don't marry because they will turn away his heart. So if you follow that reasoning to its logical conclusion, it's safe to assume, says Rabbi Yehuda, that if they don't turn away your heart, then you can marry as many as you like. Rabbi Shimon, says the Gemara, is the opposite. Loi dorish tama d'kro. It would seem to be that Rabbi Shimon says the opposite and says that no, you cannot follow the reasoning behind the pasuk, and therefore you cannot now stipulate if the Torah says don't marry too many wives, then he can't marry too many wives, period. It is dependent on the reasoning. It's not depending on the reasoning, all irrelevant. We are not Dairish time of the crow. That seems to be the machlekas. So why is that problematic? Says the Gemara, v'ha ipcha shominon lehu, question mark. But we have actually heard and learned the exact opposite. Elsewhere, in a totally unrelated matter, which the Gemara is about to explain, we're now going to see that concerning a different Aveira completely, once again, there's a machlokes between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda, and all of a sudden it seems to be that it's everything reversed. Rabbi Shimon seems to be Dairish Tam of the Krah, and Rabbi Yehuda is precisely the one who is not Dairish Tam of the Krah. What's going on? Where is that? So the Gemara explains. D'tanya. Because we have a braisa, this is right at the end of Masechtas Bav Metzia. The halacha is, as we well know, that if Reuven lends Shimon some money, then Reuven, in order to be assured that the money will be returned, has every right to demand that the loiver, the borrower, Shimon, gives him a mashkin, a collateral. So Reuven will go to Shimon's house and say, listen, I lend you $100,000, but I need to be assured that you're going to return the money. So in the meantime, not that I'm going to use, but I just want to have as a safety, I'm going into your house and I'm taking your car. Your car is worth $100,000. I'm taking it. I'm not going to use it. But in the event that you can't pay back, then indeed I will keep it. So the Torah talks about a mashkin, for example, of a beged, a ksus. A ksus is a beged. So the lender goes to the borrower's house and says, listen, I'm looking around your house and I see there's a pair of trousers, a suit, whatever you may call it. I'm taking that as a collateral. The problem is that the borrower may well need that particular beged. So what do we do then? So have a look at the braisa, the Tanya. Almona, if you have a widow, bein shehi aniya, bein shehi ashira, whether she is poor or whether she is rich, it makes no difference. Ein m'mashkenin oisa. You would never take a collateral from her. Shenema tzapasuk loy sachboil beged almona. Doesn't the Torah clearly stipulate you cannot take the clothing of this widow as a mashken? Divrei Rabbi Yehuda. So Rabbi Yehuda, as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, here we have an issa in the Torah no exceptions whatsoever. Once the Torah says, do not take a mashkin from the almona, so there's no exceptions. It's totally irrelevant whether she's wealthy or poor. Presumably, the Torah is saying we have to have extra rachmonas, extra compassion towards the almona. We do not take, therefore, a mashkin. However, Reb Shimon says something else. It depends on whether she's wealthy or poor. Ashiro, if she is a wealthy woman, then indeed, mashkin in oiso, then indeed we would take a mashkin from her. Aniyo, if she's poor, then ein mashkin in oiso, then and only then you do not take the mashkin from the almona, unlike the first opinion, Rabbi Yehuda, who says that it's a general rule. But if she's poor, ein mashkin in oiso, va'ato chayev lahachzir lo. Rabbi Yosef, how do they translate va'ato chayev lahachzir lo? You are obligated to return the mashkin. Who's obligated to return the mashkin? Which case is that referring to?
And you, it says, must return the garment to her.
In which case? In the case of the Ashiro.
No, I think it's him. Anio ein mashkin also. One may not exact security from her. Anio. And you must return the garment to her. But Ator, then he goes on, Masio Shemra Bishenoseho, and you will give her a bad name among her neighbors.
Rabbi, I think that
it's precisely because you have to return the mashkin to her because she's poor, that we don't want to now arouse suspicion. In other words, if you would take from her a beged, for example, that she needs to wear at night when she goes to bed. So if indeed you would take a mashkin, 11 o'clock at night, you'd have to knock on this widow's door and say, here, I'm returning your beged Laila. In the case of the Ashira, she doesn't miss it, she doesn't lack it, she's got 100 alternatives. So you can happily take the mashkin and there's no necessity to give it back. But in the case of the Aniya, because she's desperately poor, if you take her beged, you're going to have to return it every night, which is, of course, going to be highly suspicious. Why is it going to be highly suspicious? Why are you knocking on the door of this widow every night? And then again, once again in the morning, to pick up the beged at all. So because of that, you don't take the mashkin in the first place. And that's what it means. Because you're going to be obligated to return it because she's poor. And you're going to give her a bad name against with her neighbors. The Gemara explains this. What exactly is being said? What does this all mean? This is what it means. Because if indeed you would take a mashkin, you would necessarily be obligated to return to her the mashkin. Why? Because she's poor. In which case, you're going to give her therefore a bad name in her neighborhood and with her neighbors. So what do I see from over here? Who is the one? We have a machlokes, Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. The Torah clearly says, do not take a mashkin from an almona, period. So what is the reasoning behind that? Why are we allowed to take a mashkin from everybody else and not from an almona? So we thought previously, maybe because rachmonas have to have compassion. That's not what Rabbi Shimon is saying. Rabbi Shimon is saying nothing to do with compassion. Rather, it's because of suspicion. That if you're going to take a mashkin, and you're going to have to periodically knock on her door to return it and take it back and return it and take it back, that will look highly suspicious. If that's the reasoning, says Rav Shimon, therefore I can stipulate that only refers to a poor widow. If she's a wealthy widow and there'd be no necessity to return it, therefore you can take a mashkin. And what did Rabbi Yehuda say? Rabbi Yehuda says nothing doing. The Torah says don't take a mashkin from a widow, so you don't take a mashkin from a widow. Irrelevant whether she's poor or wealthy. So who is the one now all of a sudden being Doyresh Tama the Kroh? It's Reb Shimon. Reb Shimon is looking at the reasoning and he's saying, listen, the Torah says don't take a mashkin from a widow. Why should that be the case? So Reb Shimon is now suggesting a reasoning. And because he's suggesting a reasoning, he said it must be because that will be Goyrem Hashem Ra. If that's the reasoning, that only applies in the case of the Aniyo and not in the case of the Ashiro, and therefore we can distinguish. However, Rabbi Yehuda says, excuse me, we do not follow the reasoning. And if at the end of the day the Torah says, do not take a mashkin from an almona, then you do not take a mashkin from the almona. So all of a sudden we have an absolute stira, Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. In our Mishnah, who was the one who was following time of the crow? It was Rabbi Yehuda, because remember, Rabbi Yehuda said, the only reason why a king can't marry too many wives is because they will turn away his heart. So if you follow that reasoning, if they're not going to turn away his heart, then it's absolutely fine. And yet over here, it's Rabbi Yehuda who is not following the reasoning, because he's telling us that you cannot take a mashkin from an almona, period. And Reb Shimon in the Mishnah said the exact opposite. Reb Shimon says, I do not go with the reasoning of the Pasuk. A king cannot marry too many wives, period. And yet when it comes to the mashkin, he didn't say period. He said, it depends. Is she poor? Is she wealthy? You follow the reasoning. It's all because of suspicion, because you have to knock on her door. That only applies in the case of a poor woman, not in the case of a wealthy woman. So the very Reb Shimon in our Mishnah who did not follow the reasoning was not Deirish Tam of the Krah, in the case of the Mashkin, all of a sudden is. And Reb Yehuda in our Mishnah, who did follow the Tam of the Krah, when it comes to the Mashkin, he's all of a sudden not Deirish Tam of the Krah. That's the Gemara's Kasha, that's the Stira. Says the Gemara on the last narrow line, Alma, what do I see from over here? That Rabbi Yehuda loy dorish tamid akro. All of a sudden, it's Rabbi Yehuda who's not reasoning, not following the tamid akro, and therefore he just says you cannot take a mashkin from an almona, period. For Rabbi Shimon, dorish tamid akro, question mark. And Rabbi Shimon, all of a sudden, is following the reasoning, and that's why he says we've got to make a distinction between an almona, an neo, and an ashiro. And yet, whereas in the Mishnah, he did not distinguish. He just said, a king can't marry too many wives, period. So what's going on?
Can you just explain, please, what Tama Dekro means again?
The reasoning behind the Pasuk. The reasoning, Tama is the reasoning, Dekro in the Pasuk. Can we now rationalize? Imagine if I would say to you, it's true, and the Torah it says that you mustn't be mechalal Shabbos. But I would like to suggest that the reason why you mustn't be mechalal Shabbos is because the Torah sees it very important for you to have a rest. So if that's the reasoning, if I've had a very good rest on Friday, then maybe I'm allowed to be mechalal Shabbos. That's being Deirish Tam of the Krah. That's the reasoning that I'm suggesting. It says in the Torah, do not eat chazir. I'm suggesting that the reason why you mustn't eat chazir is because it's very bad for your stomach. It happens to be that for my particular stomach, I've done medical testing and chazir is absolutely fine. In fact, it's very healthy for me. So if that's the case, I can eat chazir. That's the whole school of thought of being Deirish Tama Dekro. So it would seem that's exactly what Reb Shimon is doing in the case of the mashkin. All the Torah said is don't take a mashkin from the almona, period. He doesn't say why or when or what or who. So Reb Yehuda takes it very seriously, very simply. Don't take a mashkin from a mona, period. But Rav Shimon says, no, I know the reasoning. I'd like to suggest the reason is because you're going to have to take it back every so often. It's going to look very suspicious that you're knocking on this single woman's door. Ah, if that's the case, so in the case of a wealthy almana whom you will not have to knock on the door, well, in that case, if the issa doesn't apply, so he's being derish, time of the crow.
So you're saying they're using this to say, well, if you're going to, he can't be the best of both worlds. Either he's derish, time of the crow, or not. So right. Here, if he's Dorish Tamer Dekro, you can't tell me that by a Melech, he's not right, Dorish Tamer.
Exactly. If Rav Shimon was Dorish Tamer Dekro by Mashkin, so why didn't he do the same in the case of the Melech? And he should have said, listen, you can't marry too many wives. That's only because they're going to turn his heart away. But if they don't turn his heart away, then it should be fine. That's what Rav Yehuda holds. So why did Rav Shimon all of a sudden disagree? What's going on?
But why is he obligated to be Dorish Tamer on every halacha? In this particular halacha, he had a feeling that there was Torah, but it doesn't mean that every single halacha, huh?
If you've always got to suggest Dairish, doesn't mean you can, it means you must. You must be Dairish Tamar Dekra. If you must be, then you've got to do it consistently. You can't say, well, over here I couldn't come up with anything, so I'll just leave it plain. You've got to be Dairish Tamar Dekra. Answers the Gemara on the first wide line. The Alma. Normally, Rabbi Yehuda loy dorish tama dekra. We have a rule and we have an exception. As a rule, Rabbi Yehuda is not being dorish tama dekra. So therefore, if you want to know why, for example, in the case of Mashkin, why in the case of Mashkin did Rabbi Yehuda say that you cannot take a Mashkin from an Almona, period, in all cases? The answer is because you're not Dairish Tamar Dekra. That is a general reason. You are not Dairish Tamar Dekra. Therefore, says Rabbi Yehuda, as far as I'm concerned, there is no room to make a distinction between wealthy Almona, poor Almona, we are not Dairish Tamar Dekra. So why in the case of Melech was it different? Why in the case of Melech did he start stipulating they will turn his heart, they won't turn heart? Says the Gemara, Ba'alma Rabbi Yehuda loy tam dorish tam de kro. Ba'vashani hocha. But in the case of Melech, it's different. That's the exception to the rule. Why is that an exception? Shani hocha. De mefaresh. Tama de Kro. Underline the word de Mefaresh. What does Mefaresh mean? He's explaining. There's a fundamental difference between suggesting a reasoning or explaining that the Torah is itself giving a reasoning. Where did the Torah give a reasoning? Says the Gemara, Ma tam lo yarbe lo inoshim, quote unquote, mishum, because, quote unquote, de lo yasru lebavi. In other words, Rabbi Yehuda says, I'm not suggesting a reasoning. If the Torah does not stipulate a reasoning, then it's not for me to start suggesting reasoning that we only mustn't do a malacha on Shabbos in order to have a rest. No, it doesn't say that, therefore I don't give a reason. But in the case of the king, the Torah stipulates a reasoning. And all I'm doing, therefore, is explaining the pasuk. The Torah says the king should not marry too many wives. It doesn't stop there. How does it carry on? And his heart should not be turned away. So Rabbi Yehuda says, so I understand that the Torah is in fact giving a reasoning itself. Why indeed can the king not marry too many wives? Because they will turn his heart away. So don't point the accusing finger at me and say, oh, you're giving a reasoning. I'm not giving any reasoning. I don't give reasons. And that's why in the case of the Almona, in the case of the Mashkin, I didn't give any reason. I didn't stipulate. But in the case of the Melech, I'm claiming that all I'm doing is being Mefaresh. I'm just explaining the Poshe Pshat in the Posuk. So therefore, we've answered one of the contradictions. Is there a contradiction in Rabbi Yehuda? The answer is no. As a rule, he is not the Irish Tamar Dekra. That's why in the case of the Almona, he reads it very simply. You do not take a collateral from an Amona period. We don't distinguish Amona, Ashira, Aniyah, all irrelevant. Whereas in the case of the Melech, he says, I'm not being Doiresh, I'm being Mefaresh. After all, the Torah adds those three words, Delo Yosra Levavoy, and I take that to mean this is the reasoning behind the Avera. So therefore, if the reason doesn't apply, the Avera doesn't apply.
So what you're saying is, it's hypothetically, if the Torah said, you have to keep kosher because it's healthier for you.
Right.
And now all of a sudden doctors come up and say, there, that's ancient thinking. Now we realize that there is no connection between kosher and healthy. You would leave you open to be say, well, if that's the case, then we don't have to keep kosher.
Right. That's what Rabbi Yehuda says. In the event that the Torah itself clearly stipulates the reasoning, so don't blame me. Where the reason applies, it applies. And if it doesn't apply, then it doesn't apply.
I have a question. Halachically in the Torah, and I'm just ignorant, on Shabbos, it just says Shomer V'Zochar, right? There is no inyan in the Torah about Menucha Shabbos, Bimintu, right? And if it did say you have to rest on Shabbos, now he said, well, rest is a subjective thing. Torah says I have to rest. I don't think playing ball on Shabbos is not restful. I enjoy it. Whatever.
By the way, my Heilige Zeda, the Ksav Sofer, in a number of places explains, and he says, there are those who want to hypothesize that Shabbos is just in order to have a rest. He says, I can prove beyond any shadow of a doubt that it's nothing to do with that. What is the proof? The proof is, because we know that Klal Yisrael received the mitzvah and the Aveira of Shabbos whilst they were in the Midbar. But let's not forget that in the Midbar, nobody was planting and nobody was harvesting and nobody was doing any work. All their food was taken care of. Their food, their drink, their anane hakovet. Nobody, as it were, needed a rest. So therefore, that proves once and for all that Shabbos is given to us because it's a mitzvah to keep Shabbos, period. Not because you do need a rest, or I happen to feel very relaxed and rested, so I don't need to keep Shabbos. That's a terrible, terrible mistake. Okay, so we've answered half our question. We've answered Rabbi Yehuda. Does Rabbi Yehuda, is he Deirish Talmud HaKra? The answer is, as a rule, he is not. As a rule, he is not Deirish Talmud HaKra, and that's why in the case of Mashkin, he maintains, we do not distinguish between an Almona, who is an Ashira, and an Aniyah, it's all irrelevant. Melech is different because he says, I'm not being Deirish Talmud HaKra, rather I'm being Mefarish Talmud HaKra. I'm just explaining, but I'm not darshaning, I'm not suggesting a reason. So now we need to go back to Rav Shimon. What about Rav Shimon? Because we had a contradiction in Rav Shimon's opinion, but this contradiction was the other way around. In the case of the Almana, he was Deirish Talmud HaKra. And he said, therefore, we're going to distinguish between a wealthy and a poor Almana. And yet, in the case of the Melech, he was not Deirish Talmud HaKra. He just says, you can't marry too many wives, period. Says the Gemara on the third line, Rav Shimon, Omar Lecho, and Rav Shimon will tell you the exact opposite. Mechti, Ba'alma, as a general rule, normally, Dorshinon Talmud HaKra. Normally, I would be Deirish Talmud HaKra. That's my principle. That's my opinion. And that's why in the case of the Almana, he jolly well is Deirish Talmud HaKra. And that's what led him to the conclusion that we have to make a distinction between a wealthy and a poor almana. So why, in the case of Melech, were you all of a sudden not Deirish Talmud HaKra? And you said that he cannot marry too many wives, period. The answer is, it's true that normally you could be Deirish Talmud HaKra, but in Cain. But if so, in the case of Melech, Lichtoiv kro, let the Torah write, loy yarbe loy noshim, quote unquote, velishtoik. Rav Shimon turns this on its head. Why indeed did the Torah need to add the reason in the case of Melech? If I am of the opinion that one is always Deirish Talmud HaKra ourselves, well, if that's the case, why on earth would the Torah need to add the reason? Why does the Torah say, don't marry too many wives? Why? Because they will turn his heart away. I could have calculated. I could have worked that out by myself. All the Torah needed to write was, a king shouldn't marry too many wives, period. The reasoning, I would have worked out myself. Obviously, they shouldn't turn his heart away. So it should have simply written, lo yarbe lo noshim, velishtoik, and then remain silent. Don't give a reasoning. Va'ano amina. And I would have obviously suggested, ma tam lo yarbe. I would have come to the obvious, inescapable conclusion. Why indeed could you not marry too many wives? It must be mishum de lo yosur, so that they shouldn't turn his heart away. So to the contrary, Rabbi Yehuda, you're busy telling me that he is different because you're just explaining the reasoning. I'm saying the opposite. If I always maintain that you suggest a reason, why indeed does the Torah need to write it? In which case, lo yosur, quote unquote, lo moli. So why on earth does the Torah need to stipulate the reasoning if I could have worked it out by myself? The answer is to teach me a different halacha. Afilu achas umasiro es liboy harizulo yisoeno. Do you know why the Torah needed to add in this reasoning? Because when it said, do not marry too many wives, so I would have thought, fine. Yes, it's dependent on them turning your heart away, but the issa is only if you marry too many. When the Torah added the reasoning of turning away the heart, I learned from there, says Rav Shimon, that in fact, one woman, if she turns away your heart, that's also awesome. So why indeed did the Torah ever write lo yarbeh? Says the Gemara Elo on the last medium line, Elomani Mekayem lo yarbeh. So if that's the case, how do I understand, how do I fulfill the criteria of do not marry too many? If you're telling me that even one wife, if she turns away your heart, is also, then why does it say lo yarbeh? That's what the Mishnah says. Da afilu kavigayil. Even if she's an ishot tzadekus, where there is zero chashash, she will turn away your heart, there still remains an issa. Which means, Rabbi Yisai, therefore, in the final analysis, Rabbi Yehuda is normally not Derish Tam of the Krom. Melech is an exception because he claims that I'm just being mefarish Tam of the Krom. Rabbi Shimon is the exact opposite. Rabbi Shimon normally is Derish Tam of the Krom. But Melech is an exception for the exact reason that why indeed did the Torah need to stipulate the reason? And if the Torah stipulated the reason, it's to tell you clearly a different halacha. And it's to tell you that even if she marries, even if he marries one woman who turns away the heart, that will be Asa. Too many is an Issa. Nothing to do with turning away the heart, even in the case of very righteous women, like Avigal.
So according to the Briskers, they'd say Tzvei Dinim. One, first of all, you should know you can't marry a woman who's going to turn your heart away.
Good.
Halacha number one. And by the way, halacha number two, a king also can't marry a lot of women. They don't give a reason for that. We don't. It's a chok. We don't need to know what the reason is.
Right.
Kacha, it's a chok. That's it. Don't combine the two.
Well put. Okay, we'll hold it over here. Bez Hashem will continue tomorrow morning. Abo aleinu l'teva.